Welcome to the inaugural show of the Smoke and Mirrors Hours, otherwise known as Canatix. We'll be coming to you weekly talking about the latest news in cannabis and politics and anything else that you send us on the tip lines. You can find us online at Facebook, the Millennium Grown Network. You can also search for the same on Twitter if you want to follow us there. And any messages you send in will be answered, and if there are subjects there you want us to take a look at, we'll take a look at those as well. I am your host, Dean Bortel. I'm joined in studio by Sebastian Kott. He is here, and he'll introduce himself. So why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, Sebastian?
Sure. Well, my name is Sebastian Kott, and I'm actually from France originally. Live in Georgia and moved to Colorado as a refugee with my wife and my kid, Jagger, about a year ago. After Georgia legislation did not pass the bill when we really needed to be able to stay home in 2014, we decided to move to Colorado. Jagger is going to be 5 years old in about 3 weeks, and he is he has a terminal mitochondrial disease called Lee's disease. It's very rare, and it affects all part of his body, but he mostly has a lot of seizures and pain and gastro issues and breathing issues. And since we've been to Colorado, he's been doing a lot better with the seizures and with the pain. We also use a mix of CBD and THC, and that works great for him. Now, he's still obviously a terminal patient, and he's still on the hospice, but we know we give him a way better quality of life, which was our goal all along. We know this is not a cure for his disease. That does not exist. But if you can increase the quality of life, then you increase the quantity of life. I am also on the board of the Flowering Hope Foundation, which is a 501c non-for-profit foundation to help educate people about cannabis. And we also do a lot of support for patients that take our product called Haley's Hope. Other than that, I've been one of the parents in the leadership group in Georgia to pass HB 885, which we did not pass, but then we were able to pass HB 1 last year. And we are already working on our next bill in Georgia, which obviously we don't know the name yet, but it's coming up in January, and we started to work on that. So trying to keep busy with educating people and trying to help as many patients as possible and spread the word that, you know, cannabis, whole plant, full spectrum cannabis is helpful for many, many people. And I'm very excited about this show. I think it's going to be a great show, and we really got to go deep into some issues, and we got to try to really put the truth out there. There's a lot of misconception and mistruth from the media and from different groups in the cannabis world, and we want to make sure that people know what's going on, understand that things like CBD only is not the answer for most. And so it's going to be a very good show where we are really going to try to educate the public and give you the truth. It's not going to please everybody. We know that.
Yeah, no way. No way. It's already started, man, before we recorded our first show.
No, so. we know that, but, you know, we got to speak the truth, and we got to tell people exactly what's going on and exactly what every single one of our listeners can do to help the cause. I mean, at the end of the day, we're all in this together. We have to all be pushing for the same common goal, to get medical cannabis available to everybody that need it all over the country. And I think that's the ultimate goal, and hopefully we can play a small part in that.
Absolutely, and you know, I think that we're in a unique position, and it's not because of who we are, right? But it's because of the circumstances that we didn't volunteer for. I mean, we're just here, right?
Absolutely.
We could have easily come to Colorado, and in our case, experienced this medical marvel, if not miracle, and then just went on living our life and got out of the spotlight and stepped aside and just let it be someone else's problem. But I think since this is a political show, that would be too in line with the problem in the country as large today, because people are just disengaged. You and I know quite a bit about you, and you know a little about me, are not the most likely of people to be up here, I think, at doing this kind of thing. But I think at the same time, civic duty knows no political party, it knows no religion, and it certainly knows no level of limit to compassion when it comes to your fellow human being. I think that the mission is a good one, and I think that it's one that will transcend this show across the network and out to the industry as a whole, because we cannot lose containment on this.
No, we can't. And at the end of the day, it's like you say, it's a battle we can't lose. We don't have a choice. We cannot lose this.
Right.
We have to win. And one way or another, we have to get to the ultimate goal. And it's not even an option. So we have to keep fighting.
Yeah. And let's be clear here. As many strides as we've made, the prohibitionists are never going to go away. They have a vested interest in prohibition. It's actually good for some people. I'm not saying it's a good thing. So don't say Dean said it was a good thing. I think it's an awful thing for some entities. It is in their best interest to continue it. We'll get into that in other shows. But what we can't do as a movement, and this is a human rights movement, I would argue, we cannot take a break. Because right now they're stumbling. Because they don't know how to deal with people like you and I. There's no box. Or even Alexis and Colton. You know, those two really being out there on the front line. They can't. There's no box they can really put them in. And so this is what we've got to keep pushing home is every time they come at us with rhetoric, respond not with anger, but with facts. And, you know, an informed electorate is the most important thing in any country.
It's also very powerful and very dangerous to many people.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, not just the politicians, but you got to remember, politicians, many, not all, we love some of you, have sponsorships. I mean, that's just part of the game is money. And, yes. You know, getting access to these people. And if you don't have access, unfortunately, it can be a real problem for being part of the democratic process now, which is unfortunate. But we will do our best. What this show is, we will do our best to put the information out there. Our goal is clear. It is not to protect any politician, any corporate entity, whether they're inside or outside of the medical or cannabis industry. That's not our job. Our job is to moderate issues that are affecting patients, caregivers, and even people looking from the outside in, the unfortunate ones that live in prohibition land now, as it's being called. You know, so we'll present the facts. We won't try to hide bias when it's completely outlandish. I mean, that would be nonsensical. I mean, that wouldn't make any sense. If it's dumb, it's dumb, you know, and we'll present it as such. So it's going to be a lot of fun. It will be one of the more controversial shows. I know all of you aren't going to love me. You're certainly not going to love Sebastian, but just know we love you, and it's all good. You can love us, hate us, just listen to us. We'll be good to go. So with that, we're going to talk about what we got today. Today we've got some of the bigger topics. We debated a lot about what to start with. So we've been working on that, and it was just a natural progression that we ended up on the CARES Act, Americans for Safe Access. Mike with Americans for Safe Access, who will be a guest on the second part of the show today. And, you know, the CARES Act is really where the news is right now.
Oh, no, absolutely. And, you know, there are several bills at the federal level, and we took a look at all of them. And, you know, while it's not a perfect bill, I don't think there's such a thing as a perfect bill yet, maybe in a couple of years, this is still the best one. This is still the best chance we have to make things move in D.C., which at the end of the day is where things have to move. This is great when people are doing things at a state level, and we need that. But until we can get a federal law, then we'll still have problem. Even in states that have laws, either comprehensive laws or CBD-only laws, there are still problems. You know, in Colorado, this problem. Even Colorado, by giving the oil in a school for the kids. In Georgia, we have problems, and that will be a topic for one of our follow-up shows. But there's problem with accessing it. Places like Florida, that have a huge problem because everything is tied up in court. So all over the country, there are problems right now. Those are not going to be fixed until we have a federal solution in D.C. And again, career is the best thing we have right now. It's not perfect by any means, and I know it's a controversial issue, and I know many of you listening right now do not like this bill, but this is what we got Mike in on today. Is we're going to go to every part of the bill one by one, and we're going to ask Mike exactly what's going on with those parts, why it's in the bill, and so on, and what part of the bill is the biggest controversy, which one is going to be easier to pass, and something maybe has to be split up at some point. You know, right now we're being very animate about keeping it as a whole, as one bill. But don't believe all the hype and everything you're hearing online. It's not dead, and Mike would tell you that. And it's actually got a huge boost a couple of weeks ago with Senator Schumer from New York, which will be the next minority or majority leader, depending on the result of the 2016 election. co-sponsoring this bill. So that is a bill when Senator Schumer has no co-sponsor, and that's a huge boost because we know that in his next position, again, being minority or majority leader, it's going to be on his radar. It's not going away. It's going to be around, and it's going to be the best chance we have to get anything moving in D.C., as controversial as it may be. And but very excited about getting Mike on the show in a few minutes to talk about it.
Excellent. So as you can see, our subjects are going to be very broad. There are many people affected by this subject. You know, we're going to cover them. If you're in a state and you wonder if you're going to be covered on the Smoke and Mirrors Hour, I can guarantee you if there is a medical cannabis or cannabis-related issue in your state and we're aware of it, it's going to be covered. And it's going to be covered at length. And so everybody listening, whether you're for or against, please be warned that this show will air the news as fact. If we ask for comment, please comment, because we want to present both sides of the argument. We don't want to go to the air with one side of the argument. Whether you agree with us or not, we respect that. We want to talk to you. It's not going to be a shouting fest. If you come to the show because you're looking for a fight, it will get heated at times. It'll be fun at times, but it's not going. We're not going to be combative. Nobody wins that. But we will go after those who are doing wrong by the patients and by the public. So with that, we want to welcome you aboard what is sure to be a wild ride. We're going to take it to our first break. And when we come back, we're going to be joined by Mike from Americans for Safe Access. He's going to talk us through the CARES Act as only he can. We could sit here and talk till we're blue in the face, but this man's on the ground every day dealing with this issue. And so don't listen to the rumors. Don't run away and listen to the naysayers. Stick around during the commercial break, and we'll get to the bottom of this as soon as we get back. Talk to you in a few.
Hey, Mike, Sebastian here. Thank you so much, Mike, for giving us a few minutes here to talk about Career Act. And first of all, can you just introduce yourself maybe? And I did not even try to pronounce your last name because I know I'm going to butcher it. So if you could do that, and if you could tell us maybe a little bit of a background about who you are and what you do for American for Safe Access.
My name is Michael Lazuski. I am the Government Affairs Director for Americans for Safe Access. And basically, I do a lot of the lobbying work for Americans for Safe Access. We're a medical marijuana patient advocacy organization. We only advocate on medical marijuana, both patient access issues and expanding research. This is the focus of our organization. And I do a lot of our lobbying, some of our legislative analysis and regulatory comments and that sort of thing. So that's what I do.
Great. Well, thank you very much. And we surely appreciate all your hard work. I know you are in D.C. And going to Congress probably on a weekly, if not daily basis during session to try to make the movement move forward. So we really appreciate it. So if we can start just with a little background of the Career Act and how it got started and who's behind it and maybe an update on how is it going right now as far as sponsors and co-sponsors and things like that.
CARES Act, it's the most comprehensive piece of medical marijuana legislation that we've ever seen introduced in Congress. And we've seen bills introduced in Congress going back even into the 90s. Barney Frank introduced the State's Medical Marijuana Patient Protection Act. And that for a long time, it got introduced, but it didn't, you know, not too many people joined on to it. There wasn't a whole lot of energy around it. There certainly wasn't press coverage around it. But it would have done something similar to CARES in that it would protect, it would have protected all the state medical marijuana programs and those who use them to obtain their medicine and get relief. And that bill, like I said, had been introduced several times, but, you know, there was no energy behind the bill other than a handful of advocates working on it. When Barney Frank retired back in 2012, Earl Blumenauer took up the mantle there and really started pouring a lot of energy into medical marijuana. And he reintroduced that bill. We worked with his office to expand it to take on some additional research components. And that was sort of the forebearer to CARES. Was this bill. And like I said, CARES is a very comprehensive bill. You know, covers a number of categories. It protects state medical marijuana programs. It removes marijuana from Schedule I of the Controlled Substances Act. It removes CBD extracts entirely from the Controlled Substances Act. It creates banking services access for medical marijuana businesses. It allows banks to provide those services without interference from the federal government. It removes several research barriers and also lifts the gag order imposed on VA physicians that prevents them from recommending medical marijuana to veterans. And all these individual components of CARES in some form, either nearly identical language or the broad concept, all those components had been introduced in some sort of form. Like I said, the State Medical Marijuana Patient Protection Act was the sort of the cornerstone around it. But, you know, in the House last session, there was the banking bill was introduced, Rep. Perry's Charlotte's Web bill for CBD. The Earl Blumenauer introduced the Veterans Equal Access Act. So, yeah, that was taken care of. Rescheduling was addressed in the State Medical Marijuana Patient Protection Act, as well as the research barrier. So, you know, you had all these sort of different components already there. And so last year, there was some energy from both an interest from Senator Booker and Senator Paul on trying to do some medical marijuana legislation. They were going to introduce the Senate version of the Rohrabacher-Farr Amendment if it ever got to the Senate floor, but it didn't shake out quite that way last year with that. So they were already looking to do something and started developing this. And Senator Gillibrand, also as a result of the New York State program and some of the federal issues up there, she was also gaining interest. So there was just this newfound interest in the Senate. We had never really seen senators before wanting to introduce medical marijuana legislation. And, you know, one thing about the Senate is when they get involved in an issue, they do it in a big way and in a professional way. And, you know, we really got a great bill with the CARES Act, and the Senate office is working behind it. So that's a little bit of a history of how it came together.
Now, Mike, I know we're going to go through this as we break this bill down, basically. Mm-hmm. But I know one question that's going to come up quick. There is a huge push within the veterans community for medical cannabis for things such as PTSD, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
And so my question specifically is with that. You mentioned that this was going to give access to VA doctors to be able to now there's two questions here. Is it prescribe medical cannabis or is it recommended? And the second part of that question is this going to be telling the VA as a whole, hey, we're the feds and this is the way it's going to be and the states can deal with it because we're prescribing people that need it the medicine? Or is it going to be limited to states that actually have the courage to pass medical cannabis reform?
Yeah, you know, to answer the first question on the prescribe versus recommend, it would be recommend, you know, until marijuana goes through the FDA approval process. There won't be prescriptions for medical marijuana, but you'll still be able to get recommendations just like as happening in the current state programs. To answer the second part of your question, while this would apply to the VA nationwide, it would defer to whatever the state medical marijuana law is right now. So that, you know, currently VA doctors aren't allowed to write recommendations. You know, say a VA doctor is in California. He or she cannot write the recommendation there for a veteran patient, even though it's legal for a physician to write a recommendation elsewhere in California. But, you know, say a state like Kansas that doesn't have any sort of medical marijuana protection, veterans there, unfortunately, still would not be able to have access unless the Kansas state government were to pass a medical marijuana program. So it would be limited in that regard, but it would at least put veterans on equal footing as to everyone else in their state.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, thanks for the clarification, Mike. And obviously we've seen, I think everybody will agree, that's a starting step. Even if we were to pass this, there's still a lot of work left to do. But I think we can all agree that it's a great starting step, and it will help a lot of people. And it will definitely open the door to get more legislation in Congress down the road.
Oh, absolutely. And just another point with that is if CARES were to pass and state medical marijuana programs were protected, I think you would see a lot more states adopting medical marijuana programs, and the ones that have them would probably be expanding them because then it wouldn't be this sort of, well, we got to do this as strictly as we can possibly do it, just to make sure that we don't have federal interference. So you would, you know, by removing that factor, I think that would increase the number of programs and the number of conditions available in the current program. So I think it would just improve the situation overall.
Yeah, it's really pretty fascinating when you step back and just take a moment to look at it, because I think in your last statement, some of the things that stood out to me are, we're from Texas, and there was a absolute catastrophe in Texas this year with the bill that they passed. It was Senator Eltif's bill for CBD only. I mean, that bill is a disaster from the ground up, and no one will probably likely ever get medicine because they have to prescribe it. In the law, it says they must write a prescription, and we've been reaching out to physicians, and we haven't found a single one. Even here in Colorado, the ones we meet, would you prescribe it? No one has ever said yes. They've all said the same thing. It's illegal. We can't. So I think that they, you know, there's that. So I think that's really smart in the federal law, and I think states need to take a moment and look at it. So my question to you about CARES specifically, what are you finding as you shop this bill around? I mean, I know there's a lot of rumors flying around, stuff like that, but what are you finding are the different angles, say perhaps the Democrats are taking to the Republicans in their reception? What has been your take on that?
Yeah, well, you know, the biggest difference I would say between how Democrats and Republicans sort of approach this bill is, you know, the Democrats tend to look at this as, you know, a public health issue, and medical marijuana being a component to a robust and comprehensive public health system. Republicans, on the other hand, seem to be approaching this more from a states' rights perspective. And, you know, sometimes some of the Republican members think that, you know, medical marijuana is a, you know, valid form of therapy. Some are, you know, think it's, you know, just this sort of whatever to allow people just to smoke pot, you know, just some sort of a ruse to let people do that. While a lot of other Republicans, they may think that medical marijuana is valid and they want to facilitate that access. That's not their main reason for doing it. It's again, that states' rights component is what moves them typically. Although we're starting to see more and more Republicans becoming on board with this from a compassionate access angle as well. But definitely the states' rights angle is the main appeal to Republicans.
So technically, there's something in that bill for everybody. Democrats should like it because it's a public health issue. It's going to help patient. And Republicans should like it because it's protecting the states' right and protecting the state's medical cannabis program. So hopefully, you know, we can come to consensus and everybody can kind of agree on that. But can you give us the latest update? I think I look last time I looked was about 15 co-sponsors. And if you can just give us a little bit, talk a little bit about that. And then obviously the big thing that happened a few weeks before recess was Senator Schumer backing up this bill. If you can talk about the importance of that.
Yeah, you know, you're right. I believe there are 15 co-sponsors on it. And in the final week of the session before the August recess, both Senator Schumer and Senator Barbara Mikulski from Maryland co-sponsored the bill. And, you know, both of them are very high-ranking members of the Senate, and they tend not to get involved in an issue unless they want to see it get passed, and they're willing to put some energy into making that happen. So those were some pretty key pickups. There's definitely a growing momentum for this bill, but I can understand from the outsider's perspective, it may just appear that it's completely stalled or it's not going anywhere. You know, one thing I think people should consider when you know, looking at the progress of CARES, it was introduced back in March. The Americans with Disabilities Act was introduced back in 1988, in May of 1988. It wasn't signed into law until July of 1990. So we're talking 26 months is the journey that that bill took. And again, that was a monumental, comprehensive piece of legislation, somewhat similar to CARES in that it was, you know, a very comprehensive bill. It took a lot of work to get it passed. But, you know, I think that can help give, you know, congressional legislation moves a lot slower than state legislation. So advocates who have been working on state legislation who look at the progress of CARES and they're wondering, you know, geez, what's going on there? You know, it's things at the federal level definitely move slower. But some of the great things that have been happening, you know, May through July, is when Congress does all of its appropriations bills typically. And in these appropriations bills, there are amendments that have been introduced to help medical marijuana patients. There was a veterans amendment that would have forbid the VA from punishing VA physicians if they wrote a recommendation. So it wouldn't actually change the VA policy on not allowing the VA doctors to write recommendations, but it would take away that punishment so they could actually do it without being punished. There's the Rohrabacher-Farr Amendment, which protects state medical marijuana programs. That was passed with 242 votes in the House. And in the Senate committee, it was approved 22-8. And that's really similar to Section 2 of the CARES Act, which is the state protection component. The state protection component in CARES is definitely better and more binding, and it would once and for all end the question of whether or not the federal government can interfere with state programs. But, you know, we've seen that particular issue within CARES has substantial support in both the House and Senate. And then also the there was a banking amendment introduced that was similar to the banking component in CARES. That only went through on the Senate side because the House didn't take up the financial services appropriations bill yet. But the I believe that passed 16-14. So that one was a little bit more controversial, but that was in part because it covers both recreational and medical marijuana banking access. So there was a little bit of hesitancy on that particular point. But, you know, pretty much except for the House vote on the Veterans Amendment, which we lost by two votes on the floor, and it was a really, really heartbreaking defeat because two members probably should have voted yes. One representative accidentally voted no, and he apologized the very next day in the news. It was heartbreaking to hear that. And then another member, Representative Griffith from Virginia, he said the bill didn't go far enough for him. Or the amendment didn't go far enough for him. So that's the reason why he didn't vote for it. So there was majority support in the House, at least for that concept, at least in theory. So that wasn't a major setback. And actually, we picked up about 25 votes from when we did it last year. You know, the momentum keeps moving forward with this bill. And I think once we come off the August recess here, I think we're going to be seeing some more action. I know that a number of patients are planning to come to D.C. Throughout September and do some meetings. And I think we're going to see some more action from the medical community. I think we're going to see some more health organizations coming on board to endorse it. And I think we're just going to be seeing more and more energy going behind this bill and making it something that Senator Grassley can't ignore. And we'll ultimately have to give it a hearing.
Right, absolutely. And for those listeners just joining us, we're on the phone with Mike from Americans with Safe Access. We're talking about the CARES Act here on the Smoke and Mirrors Hour. A lot of the negativity aimed at this bill is confusion with another bill that's been submitted, the Charlotte's Web bill, where this bill is not a CBD-only bill, correct? Let's put that issue to bed right now.
Yeah. There are no caps on THC within the CARES Act, except within the CBD descheduling component, which only applies to CBD extracts. But as far as full THC marijuana products that are available in current states, that wouldn't be restricted in any way. There's no there'd be no caps on medicine that's currently available in the state program, so that would be unaffected.
Now, that's great. And that's I think that's something we really have to push because there is a lot of confusion out there. Some people are just saying, and the other flip of that, people are saying, well, all we need is the CBD and the Charlotte Web Hemp Act. And if you looked at it, really, is you can take the Charlotte Hemp Act, and that's in Korea pretty much. So why not just try to ask for more, to cover as many patients as possible and not just keeping this as a few small percentage of seizure patient only, but just looking at the whole thing. Because what I think people need to understand is Korea will protect you if you are one of the few lucky ones that needing just CBD only, you will be protected under Korea. You will be able to get your CBD anywhere you want because Korea takes the CBD totally out of the Controlled Substance Act. So I think that's something we still have to push for some parents out there. Let's just not try to help yourself, but let's just try to help everybody. You know, we're all in this fight together. And if you want to just, if all you need is CBD only, that's great. Korea is going to give you that. But what about the veterans? What about the people that need THC? What about the people in, you know, in Georgia, for example, that federally, they're still breaking the law every day? What about the people in Illinois that are breaking the law federally every day? So I think we have to make sure our audience really understand that Korea is the most comprehensive bill, as Mike said, and that will help as many people as possible. The fastest, if we can pass this. Mike, we are just have a couple of few more questions for you.
Sure.
So one of them, you know, if you can just, I know we already talked about this, but I think it's very, very important to put this message across. Can you please reassure everybody that Korea is not dead? Because, I mean, we're hearing that every day. You only have a few co-sponsors. All of them are Democrats. You don't have any Republican. So can you tell us, really reassure us that it's not dead, when there's a big push for it, number one? And number two, can you tell the people listening to us today, what can they do to help with this effort? Because it's going to take a monumental effort from all of us to get this passed. So can you tell people how to help?
Yeah, you know, like I said, you know, the bill is far from dead. The fact that Senators Mikulski and Schumer joined on to this bill in that last week of July, they wouldn't put their names behind dead legislation. They wouldn't do that. They don't put co-sponsor legislation just to put a feather in their cap. They only do things that they're serious about. And like I said, you know, this bill was only introduced a couple of months ago. It's received, think of how many congressional bills that you've heard of that have gotten any news coverage versus the number of congressional bills that have been introduced.
That's a good point.
And CARES is in that mix. There's very few bills that that people can actually just be like, oh yeah, that's something that Congress has introduced and it's working on. So, you know, it's receiving a lot of media attention. It's getting attention from leadership, and it's the momentum is building. You know, some of the meetings that we've been having, I think, you know, we're getting closer to getting more Republican co-sponsors, and you know, that's actually what we can, what people out there can do if they want to help move this bill forward. If your senators haven't co-sponsored yet, you should be writing them, calling their offices. If you can make it to D.C., you know, an in-person meeting always goes a long way, even if it's with a staffer. And Americans for Safe Access, we're glad to help arrange meetings. If people are coming to town, they can get in touch with us, and you know, we can help coordinate meetings and that sort of thing. But also, you know, if your representative or senator has already signed on to it, why don't you be calling them and writing to them and encouraging them to do more work on it. You know, and make them realize, you know, first of all, thank them for supporting it, but also to encourage them to be reaching out to their fellow senators to support the bill as well, because that's another way that we can build support. And, you know, writing op-eds to local newspapers whenever there's a story on medical marijuana, you know, you can tie it back to the CARES Act. You know, that's ways of keeping it up for patients with particular medical conditions. They should be encouraging whatever the medical society, like the MS Society or Epilepsy Foundation. Epilepsy Foundation's already on board. Alzheimer's Foundation, all these organizations that help patients with a particular issue, encourage that organization to throw their support behind it. Because, you know, as a medical marijuana bill that's not limited to CBD only, it has this ability to, you know, help just about every patient who needs medical marijuana access, and all these conditions that aren't really helped by CBD only approaches like ALS or chronic pain or these sorts of things. You know, the patient community really should start rallying behind it, and we need it from all over the patient community. I think one of the reasons why we've seen this sort of drifting into this CBD only legislation is because, yeah, the great advocacy work we've seen from the parents community for seizure disorders, and the parents have been doing an amazing job of bringing that issue to the forefront. The one sort of adverse side effect of that is it's allowed politicians to do this just CBD thing just to help the parents with the sick children, and then they feel like they can move on with it. They can check off medical marijuana in their box and that they've done something on it. Meanwhile, you know, patients with Alzheimer's or Crohn's disease or whatever, you know, don't get access. So, you know, I think getting your medical organization, whatever condition you have, if you're a patient, and really working them to support the bill, because chances are they have lobbyists in Washington, D.C. as well. So, you know, we need to have those folks bringing it up in their meetings too. While CARES wouldn't necessarily change the law in a place like Kansas or Texas or Wyoming or wherever, it would at least encourage those states to pass something. And, you know, in the next legislative session or two, you know, we'll probably see those laws passed. So,
It's a good point, Mike. It's a good point because, you know, we are being from Georgia. We fought for that bill in Georgia and we were able to pass a bill. But one of the main thing we got, one of the main objection we got from a few people, not many, I got to say most of Georgia was behind us, but was, well, we don't have a federal law. And even if you do something in Georgia right now, you're still breaking federal law. And I'm not going to vote for a bill that is going to go against federal law. So I'm sure this happened in Georgia. I'm sure that happened in every single state that tried to pass a bill, being a comprehensive bill or a CBD-only bill. Doesn't matter. So, yeah, I mean, I think this is, you know, to your point, if we have Career Act, at least we won't have to worry so much about that. And I do agree with you and do believe that if we were able to pass this bill in D.C., we would see many states like Kansas, like South Dakota, like states that don't even want to touch it, getting into it and looking into passing state laws.
I agree.
All right, good. Well, Mike, you know, thank you so much. And I say thank you so much for your time again. You are definitely, it's been great, and you've been a great great help to get people to understand what Career is about. And just to finish up, I'd like to do something a little bit more fun, you know, because this is kind of a heavy topic. I mean, it's, you know, it's not a fun topic. We're talking about saving people's life here. So it's a serious topic. But can you give us, and, you know, hopefully you can, your top three, maybe top five list of people in Congress, either being in the House or in the Senate in D.C., that we need to get out as a group then to push our effort forward. Whom are the top five foes of the medical cannabis movement?
Yeah, and, you know, this is kind of an interesting question, too, because our foes, or at least the members in Congress who traditionally have been our foes, usually they had a very monolithic, singular point of view on marijuana, and that it was all bad, and it was, you know, oppose. And now we're seeing these longtime opponents, such as, you know, Senator Grassley, Senator Feinstein. You know, they're certainly not our allies quite yet, but, you know, their perspective on medical marijuana is changing, you know, and at least their ear is open. So, you know, I don't think that Senators Feinstein and Grassley are quite the foes that they once were. Although, you know, undeniably, if we had someone other than Senator Grassley leading the Senate Judiciary Committee, we would have a better shot at getting a hearing. And I think that's true of just about, you know, there's probably about half of the Republicans on that committee who would be more open to giving it a hearing. On the House side, probably our biggest opponent, the biggest thorn in our side, is Representative Fleming from Louisiana, and he has his eye on the Senate. There's a chance that Senator Vitter is going to become governor after Jindal, and then he may appoint Fleming, and Fleming may then run to fill in that recess appointment election as the incumbent, and would likely get in there. So if he became a senator, that could be a pretty bad set of circumstances. I'd say, you know, probably the member in the House that is clogging up legislation more than anyone else, and his name doesn't come up much as a medical marijuana opponent, but Representative Pitts from Pennsylvania, he's the chair of the Energy and Commerce Subcommittee on Health, and that's the bill that the subcommittee that CARES would be going through, likely in the House. It's been assigned to four committees, but that's the one where it would likely have to go through. He's not letting any marijuana legislation through. He's not even open to the Charlotte's Web bill right now. He's blocking everything. So he's sort of the silent opposition opponent or stealth, but he's really an opponent that's in the way. I know a lot of people think of Andy Harris as one of the biggest foes, and he has been for a really long time. But Harris is kind of an interesting one in that he's at least starting to put his money where his mouth is, and he tried to get an amendment into the 21st Century Cures Act that would have created more access for research. It wouldn't have been the best research bill, but his theory is that medical marijuana, even if we do the research, we're going to find out that it doesn't do anything, which I think empirically, we have well over a million medical marijuana patients in the country right now, and they experience great relief, and we have lots of studies as well to back that up. But, at least Andy Harris is willing to let science be the arbiter. To some extent, at least, he's not lifting all the barriers or doing it in any sort of hurried fashion. But he's at least, coming at this from a more academic perspective, even if we sharply disagree with where we think the science would ultimately lead us. So, yeah, I would have to say Representative Fleming, and who potentially end up as Senator Fleming, is probably our biggest opponent, and Representative Pitts is just as bad, even though he's a little more stealth in the way that he's blocking legislation.
Yeah, I didn't know him, so that's great. I mean, that's absolutely great info, and that's definitely what our audience need to know. I know many people from Pennsylvania trying to push this. So if you're in Pennsylvania, just keep his name, remember his name, and keep pushing. And I would say the same thing if you're in Iowa, Senator Grassley, I think that's where he's from, Iowa. Yeah, so if that's where you're from, just keep calling his office, emailing him. Mike, that's just great stuff.
And just a quick point on Senator Grassley. He, if nothing else, he does listen to his constituents. And he goes back to town hall meetings and public forums quite frequently, more so than the average senator. And so patients would be wise to show up at these events. I know some have already done this with him. And it's worked to some extent. There have been these interactions with him, and his office has been more responsive on this issue. So, if patients can keep that up, I think we're going to see some good things happening. I think that's actually the key to us getting hearings in the Senate is some strong push there locally in Iowa.
Yeah, it's interesting you bring that up, and I want to drive this point home with our listeners. A lot of times people think that they can't make a difference. What would be your message to those people who say, I can't make a difference, or it's dangerous for me to come out? How can you put them at ease, and what advice would you give them?
That's definitely a concern with many patients, that they don't want to, go into a federal office building and admit to an employee there that they use marijuana in violation of federal law. And, that's, first of all, it's a deeply personal decision to be talking about, your medical health issues, regardless of legal implications. But to do it in that situation can be intimidating. What I can say is, even in our most virulent of opponents, that's not a problem. We don't see retaliatory type of action as a result of that. The offices, by and large, tend to be very respectful, even if they're opposed and don't believe that marijuana is medicine. I think I've only had probably I've had hundreds of meetings at this point, and there's only two that stick out in my head where staffers were actually rude to patients in a way that was just reprehensible. But even in those meetings, it was just poor treatment. It wasn't anything of a concern to a patient's safety or well-being or liberty. But on the other point on that is whether or not one patient can make a difference or not. I've absolutely seen that be the difference, and one person can definitely be the difference more so in state legislation because there's fewer levers to pull and it's more grassroots on that level. But even in congressional legislation, it takes, you know, for a member of Congress to want to get concerned about an issue like this, they need to know that it's affecting their constituents. Because members of Congress, they may or may not be voting their special interests, and donors want them to vote, but they also do represent their constituents, and they're not going to support something that, you know, they don't have any momentum or concern from their constituents. So it's quite possible that no one from a representative's district has brought this issue up, or maybe only one patient has, or only a handful. And so, you know, the more patients that that get engaged, it can really be helpful, particularly patients with health issues beyond seizure disorders, just because we've you know, I think one of the things we've seen with seizure disorder as an issue is, you know, it's the parents that are doing a lot of the advocating. I know you said your daughter Alexis does a lot of advocating, but, you know, typically, you know, the patients in these instances tend to be young children, and maybe they come to the meetings. But what you have are the caretakers doing a lot of the advocacy, which I think it's just a little bit easier for the caretakers to be able to do this than the patients themselves, for one thing. You know, just dealing with a health issue and being able to advocate. It's difficult, it's draining, and it's emotionally taxing. And it's a slow process, and it's not very rewarding until you actually get the legislation passed. So, you know, I can definitely understand the apprehension of wanting to get involved for those factors. But yeah, every patient's voice can make a difference. And I've seen, you know, staffs change their minds, and offices change their perspective or take a better and more vigorous stance behind medical marijuana as a result of a single meeting. So patients can definitely make an impact, you know, just their one visit. It may or may not do that. And I hope patients won't get frustrated if they get involved and don't see results immediately. Like I was saying before, it took over 2 years to get the Americans with Disabilities Act passed. You know, it's a marathon, but all the voices that we can get speaking to their representatives will make the difference.
So let me ask you this in terms of perspective. There is right now a sort of Bill of Rights for travelers, right? That was a big thing with horrible service years ago. One of the things I see in the commercial industry right now is people trying to go get jobs who are legal patients, and they can't get a job because of a urinalysis or something like that. These are legal patients certified by a doctor. I mean, we got to trust the system. We do with pharmaceuticals now. Any plans after CARES goes through to pursue a patient's Bill of Rights?
I think that would probably be the next step, is once that we get the protections in place to just allow access through the state programs. I think, you know, seeing something more defined from a patient's rights perspective, you know, issues like access to health insurance coverage for medical marijuana, those sorts of things would be more likely to happen. And also, you know, once CARES were to pass, this issue then becomes significantly less controversial at the federal level. I think we would also see better regulations and better treatment from the regulatory, for the administrative agencies, NIH, Health and Human Services. I think would be doing a better job with medical marijuana, both in research and trial programs and that sort of thing. So I think, you know, it would have a rippling effect. If we were to pass CARES, it would make it easier to pass further federal legislation, state legislation. The regulatory agencies and the administrative agencies would be more behind patients. So it would definitely have a multiplying effect.
Well, Mike, thank you so much for all your time. I mean, this is it was a big honor, a great honor for you to be in our first show, because you obviously know this bill inside and out. You're doing a great job for all the patients in DC every day, and we really, really appreciate it. And just one last thing, if you can just maybe close with that, is if I'm someone that wants to go to DC and try to meet with my congressman and my senator, and I need American for Safe Access help, how do I get hold of you guys, and what can you help me with?
Yeah, you know, we have a website, safeaccessnow.org. We have our contact info there. Yeah, if someone is coming to Washington, D.C. and they want to meet with their representatives, we can help set up the meetings. We have relationships with a lot of offices. The ones that we don't, you know, we enjoy having patients come in because that helps us build a relationship with that office. You know, we can go with the meetings. Go with the patient to the meetings and help them in that way. If the patient would prefer to do this on their own, you know, we can, you know, work with however they want to do this. But if someone's willing to take the time and effort to come to Washington, D.C., I'd like to help them out if they need it.
Great. Well, Mike, thank you so much. Really, really appreciate it. And we'll keep on following up with in the show what's going on with the Career Act. And you are welcome anytime you want on this show. You've been a great guest, and we really appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Great. Well, thanks, Sebastian, for having me on, and really appreciate it and enjoy talking with you.
What'd you think of that? Takeaways?
No, I think that's. I think it was good. I think it was really good. We went. We got some good details on what's going on. We and then we got some good strategies. And I think that's very important. Also, you know, what can I do as a caregiver, as a patient, to try to help out? And I think Mike kind of spelled that out. Offer his help and ASA help if anybody come to DC. I think that's big because it can be very intimidating. I've been to DC about 4 times now on medical cannabis, and. Now, about my 4th time, I'm okay. But, you know, the first time you walk into an office of a senator or a congressman and you don't know, and you meet with a staff, chief of staff or somebody like that, which, by the way, Mike didn't touch about this too much, but it's actually better in most cases to meet with a staff member because a congressman or the senator, he or she is so busy. They're not going to have time to talk to you to remember. But if you talk to the staff, and especially the big offices, they actually have a healthcare or a health issues staff.
Yeah, policy advisors.
Exactly. Yeah. That's the word I was looking for, a policy advisor. If you talk to that person will look into it. We'll say, okay, you know what? I think we can back this up, or no, we can't. If they can't, they will tell you why, and then you can hopefully try to change your mind. If they can, they will take this as a congressman or the senator and tell him or her to co-sign or to back it up. So that's very important. Don't get discouraged if you don't get to meet your senator or your congressman, because actually it's not always the best thing to do. And going to DC the first time and going into a room with a congressman, chief of staff or policy advisor, it can be very intimidating. And like, you know, you made that point. You're kind of telling them you're breaking federal law. You know, and I'm going there and I'm saying, well, I'm giving my, at the time, 3-year-old kid or 4-year-old kid a federal illegal substance. You know, do I need to worry about child services? What do I need to worry about? So it can be intimidating. And I've been in a meeting by myself, and I've been in a meeting with Mike and with American for Safe Access. And they're a great help because you can focus on telling your story. What is it helping your kid, your child, and why do you need that? And Mike can help with the more detailed thing. Okay, what is this part of career does? And Mike can do that. So you don't have to worry about that. You don't have to learn it. You don't have to memorize it. You can just worry about sharing your story, and Mike can share about, or Mike or anybody else from American for Safe Access, they got obviously more than one person.
Right.
They can, you know, talk the details of the bill. So you don't have to do that. So it's a great help. And I encourage anybody going to DC to contact them, because even if they can't make it, or if you don't want them there, they can give you a one pager, and I have it in front of me right now. There's a one pager that explains exactly what a career is. It's broken down into 6 parts of the bill. It has bullet points. It's perfect. It's exactly what policy advisor and chief of staff want to see. They don't want binders of stories and hundreds of pages, because they're not going to read it. You know, you got to remember, you're going there to talk about cannabis, and there's 50 other people are going there. Somebody's talking about, you know, maybe gun rights. Somebody wants to talk about abortion. Somebody wants to talk about healthcare. They're meeting hundreds of people every day, wants to talk about different things. And if everybody give them 100 pages to read, they won't never do it. But if you give them a one page bullet point document, It's very powerful, and American for Safe Access can help with that. So my takeaway is we have a lot of work left to do, but I think we have good people on our side. We have experts, as we can see, Mike knows this inside and out. He's been over hundreds of meetings in DC. Just let's rely on the expert. Let's get their help. Let's let them help us, because that's what we want to do. And so my takeaway is, call your congressman, call your senator, talk about the Carrier Act, which is, if you need the numbers, Senate Bill 683, House Resolution 1538. Those are the numbers. All the information for it can be found at Safe Access, AmericanForSafeAccess.org, which is the American for Safe Access website. And of course, you can contact the show. We can put you in contact with Mike if you want. We'd be more than happy to help in any way we can. But that's my takeaway. What is your takeaway, Dean?
Yeah, I found it interesting. One of the things I wanted to really get an answer to, and to be honest with you, I didn't think I would, and I'm really glad I did, was, you know, this is not a CBD-only bill. Another thing that was important to point out, was, and I always love to ask these kind of questions, the what next. The Patient's Bill of Rights would arguably be the second most important thing that we have going on right now. Number one, get access to the meds. But number two, protect people once they're on them. I mean, I understand certain careers. I certainly don't want an airline pilot that is impaired in any way, whether it be lack of sleep or things like that. So I think that there are some areas where we have to be more careful. But yeah, the Patient's Bill of Rights was really good to hear that they have the next step planned.
Yeah, no, that's a key, because I think we all agree Carrier is a starting point and it's not the final point. And I think Mike pushed that very hard too. Don't think this is over once we pass this. We have a lot of work to do. And to get back to your point on the 15, it's absolutely true. The fourth time I've been to D.C., talking about this, I got about 10 to 15 minutes, and a couple of times it got extended on their request. But I prepare myself for 10 to 15 minutes. Sometimes you got to get less, too. I mean, you got to be ready. They might give you 30 seconds or 2 minutes and say, sorry, I don't want to talk about this today. I don't have time today. But as Dean said, I leave a business card, and then usually I try to leave a picture, too. I print a picture of Jagger and put his email address in the back, and I have a business card with a tiny picture of him on the business card with his email address and his Facebook page. And I say, you know, feel free to go on the Safebook page. Check out how hard it was for us to move to Colorado. Check out all the progress he's made since we've been to Colorado. And some might and some might not, but it's good to leave information like that. It's not overwhelming. They can go at their discretion if they want to. You're not putting it in their face. And, you know, they might not look at it for 2 or 3 weeks. And then one day they might look at a card on their desk and they'll be like, hey, let me go check on this kid. Let's see what's going on. Let me see. I remember this meeting. So leave something behind is crucial. Always leave something behind.
Yeah, I think that's a good place to end it this time. We want to thank everybody for joining us today on the inaugural episode of this political show and dealing with a little bit of cannabis, a little bit of politics, and it's going to continue. And we've got many more topics we're going to discuss. So we thank you for joining us at, as we'd like to call it, the Colorado Studio with a View. And we will be back same time next week, same day next week. And we look forward to seeing you again. Thanks for stopping by.
Thank you very much, and thanks for listening.